This is the beginning of Class 4.
Such a good perception that if you have one, you know the thing you're having it towards is real, it exists. So this is very important, Tema. So what do you think a Tema Gibu is?
Person who has
Yeah, but it should mean that, okay, but it doesn't. It should mean anybody who has Tema. By the way, who would that be?
Buddha.
Huh? You don't have Tema?
Probably not.
You have Tema?
It's very fuzzy.
It's fuzzy, it's not Tema.
Oh,
Tema is, I see a yellow wall. Tema. Can you have, 99% of, 99%, the other night I had a non-Tema and I remember what it was. I was looking at a thing on the subway from a distance and it looked like a person, a poster of a person, and it turned out to be a banana when I got closer. That's a non-Tema. But besides those weird times like that, you know, the rest is all Tema. The rest are all Tema. So you should be a Tema Kibu, but that's not what it means. Tema Kibu means a person who has only Tema. A person who is totally Tema. And in this case, Tema doesn't mean a state of mind, it means totally correct. A person who is totally correct.
Not their perception? You're talking about the
right.
Perception.
It becomes an adjective rather than the noun for the perception. It becomes a person who is like those perceptions in that he's totally correct. And every state of mind he has is a Tema. Now who's that?
The Buddha.
Yeah, only an omniscient being can be a Tema Kibu. Normally. And in Tibetan nowadays, when you say Tema Kibu, can also refer to a great saint, because what it means is, if a Tema Kibu says something about something, what?
It's true.
You know he's telling the truth. That's very refreshing. I mean, imagine a world where people didn't say anything unless they had a Tema to back it up. You know, imagine that you restricted your own words to things that you really knew. much quieter world.
What is the difference between a saint and a Buddha?
Well, the point is that they're not totally enlightened yet, but still they are very careful not to say anything unless they have an actual tema about it. That means most of what we say about other people, we'd have to shut up. Because we don't really have tema to judge. I mean, I found myself doing it today, and I was at lunch with some. You know, if you work in a busy office, lunchtime is the time that you gossip about other people. And we were gossiping about five or six people, and then I suddenly realized, you know, I don't have any tema about any of this stuff. And that's a non-tema. So a tema kibbu is something like a person who can't lie. Cannot lie. If he says something, it's true.
Is the Dalai Lama?
You see a tema kibbu? Can you judge that?
No.
Why do you think the Dalai Lama is much different from anyone else?
Because he's too conventional.
Huh? I mean, if he wasn't chosen, he would allow that to do. But
conventional deductive reasoning.
We'll talk about it, you know. We'll talk about how can you figure out that someone's a tema kibbu? He is said to be a
tema deductive reasoning.
We'll talk about it, you know. We'll talk about how can you figure out that someone's a tema kibbu? He is said to be a tema kibbu.
Excuse me?
Ask. It's not, I'll tell you it is. No, that's actually one of the reasons of this class. You know, how do you establish that the Dalai Lama is a tema kibbu? How do you know that such a thing is possible? A, is it possible? B, is he one? We have to think about it. You have to be able to figure out how you establish it. Yeah.
It seems that
by the way, we will answer that. We will.
Which class? I've gone away. I want to do five more.
Fifth class. Next class. Now, when is that next class? Will I kill anybody if I go away for a week, or would you prefer it? Seriously. So my boss talked about 7 months. Kills anybody? Does it ruin anybody?
If you go away, you say you have 14.
But you'd like it.
Last week in August.
I think he's talking maybe next week.
No, next week.
Just for 1 week, just for 5 days.
Yes,
okay.
But you'll be here this Thursday, right?
Yeah.
Or you don't know for sure.
I'll be there. I'll be here, but it's too late to cancel. Yeah.
It sounds like Sema is something to do with a truthful awareness of what you are perceiving. So if you look down the subway platform at this yellow poster and you thought it was a picture of a person and you began to believe and put weight on that, and then you got closer and saw that it wasn't, that would have been an incorrect or untruthful relation to what you were perceiving. However, if you saw something and you said, I see a yellow object, but I'm too far away to see clearly what it is. That would be a correct sense. So in other words, if we're careful to be truthful with ourselves as much as possible, we could have tema a lot of the time.
So you have tema most of the time. I'd say with other people, somebody asked me in the other class, what level of reality are other people's thoughts on? And I didn't really remember it being in a scripture. But it occurred to me that it's almost like Shintoku kibbu. It's almost like it's very deep, hidden. Because I'm not sure you can figure out someone else's thoughts even with logic. You know? I think to really know what other people are thinking is probably almost beyond our capacity.
What about the psychics? They can tell you what the person is about.
You can reach a state of meditation, and it's in all over the Abhidharma that you can read other people's minds, and you can read other people's minds when you reach a practice of things. But I mean before that. So, that's.
You know, we're talking about, we said a Buddha only has semas all the time, and therefore he cannot lie.
Well, theoretically, you can have semas all the time and still be a liar.
That's right. So.
But the fact is, also has this internal mechanism where he will not state something without having had a tema about it.
Right.
Then you're covered.
Well, what about the idea?
Well, we're going to get there. But if I don't cover it by the end of the class, I'll see you.
But he has.
I know what you're going to ask.
He could have a tzemin and not say anything about it.
If he has a tzemin, he won't make a declaration about that thing.
Oh, but he could have.
No,
I say a saint could have a tzemin.
Right.
Or a Buddhist, people who wrote the Tanya, which are not Buddhists, according to Buddhism, had tzemins, had non-tzemins. And so they didn't say, I know this, this is how it is. They're not allowed to. If you do that, you're not eligible to be in the tenure. That's a rule. You guys are going
to
keep these other guys late. Is that okay? All right?
No, not okay.
No, go ahead.
No, okay, it's just
you never get to ask.
It's sort of vexing about how you reconcile the notion that the Buddha who's having perfect perceptions cannot lie with the doctrine of skillful means.
We're going to get there. Before the end of class, we're going to talk about it.
So very quickly then, not only is a Buddha a person of sema, who's always having sema, but they have a particular kind of sema, which is also a direct knowing. They couldn't have the kind of sema you had about, I see this yellow
object,
but
I'm not
sure that's what it is.
We'll get to that.
Yeah.
Okay. Samyakibu. Now, what does the Buddha see? And we call it his sigyu. Who's Chenrai Sig?
Avalokiteshvara.
Why is he called Avalokita? Ishvara means a Lord. What does Avalok mean? Looking down. And looking like this. It's called loving eyes. Okay? Avalokiteshvara means looking with loving eyes. Chenrai means to look at somebody like you're in love with them. And it's Sik means to look. Okay? So Sik is the word for look. It's the honorific. What do you call the word for I'm sorry, see in ordinary language, if you're talking about your friend, what's the path of seeing? What do you call the path of seeing? Tong. Okay. Tong is the non-honorific. Sik is the honorific. Okay. What's honorific? In Tibet, if someone's older than you, you have to use a different language. And if someone's younger than you, you kind of use a different language. Or your peers, you use another language. A whole other set of words. Yu means the object that the mind looks at. So Sigyo means the object that the Buddha sees. Why don't they call it the objects that the Buddha knows? It, generally, you can use the word see in the sense of knowing, but that's not the sense here. What's the sense?
Isn't that the immediacy of perception?
He sees everything directly. He doesn't have jepa-sama. He doesn't need deduction. He doesn't need authority. He doesn't need reasoning. Mm-hmm. He sees everything directly. He sees all objects directly. There's two kinds of objects that he sees. Jinyepa means as many as there are. Jinyepa means as many as there are. Jinyepa. Chö means what?
Dharma?
Yeah, generally chö means dharma, but dharma doesn't only mean religion. It can also mean things, existing things. So he sees as many existing things as there are. That's part of his sigyo. Part of what he sees is everything that exists. Everything that ever was, everything that ever will be, everything that is now, at the same time, in one moment. He sees all of them. That's his quality. That's one of his qualities.
What was the first definition he gave for that?
He sees as many objects as exist.
Existed.
I'd like to call it the totality of objects. Totality of things. Totality. Yeah, I haven't got to the second one yet. First of all, he sees everything there is. By the way, shouldn't that be everything? How come there's two?
Is that him or not?
For him, it's Mungyur. You see, I always have to ask you, for who? for whom? That's always got it. When you ask me that, I'll ask you, for whom? Because for him, it's Mungir. It's the same as colors are for us. It's obvious for him.
And he says past, present, and future.
Yeah. What, at the same time, everything that existed, everything that exists, and everything that ever will exist, he perceives in the same instant.
Did he see, let's say, the Buddha 1,000 years ago, did he see that there were going to be refrigerators and things like that?
Not only that, but he, 2,500 years ago, he set up his teachings, he spoke his teachings, so that you could have it tonight. You particularly. Seriously. No, he has that ability. He sees into the future. He knows what you're going to think 2,500 years ago. And so he says something that's going to chain react up to you in 1994. He has that ability. Personally, Taylor. Okay. Say, Jitawaychun. Chitawa means as it is, as they are. As they are. Chö means run. Of existing things, existing objects. Which is what? What is the way things are? Emptiness. Their emptiness, their true nature, their ultimate nature.
So it's really like describing two kinds of objects.
You're right.
The two different ways
we have the same object. Two levels. He sees all the stuff that there is, and he sees how all the stuff that there is ultimately is.
So you're saying the first is this, he sees the conventional nature?
Yeah.
For who?
Wait a minute.
Healthy or not?
The first
is me? For whom? Well, we'll talk about it. I'll talk about it right now. He's the only being who can concentrate on both of these objects at the same time. You or I, or anyone else who's not a Buddha, either we are seeing emptiness directly, or we are seeing other things directly. But we cannot focus on both at the same time. When you go into the direct perception, of emptiness at the path of seeing, at the first moment of the path of seeing, you can no longer perceive anything else. You can't have any other perception. You can't even think that you're seeing emptiness. Because that's a relative truth. That's a relative object. You is a relative object. You seeing emptiness is a relative object. Emptiness is an ultimate object. So you can only focus on one at a time. You can't have any... That's why they call it chula chushakma, water poured in water. Because you can't even, you're not even aware that of yourself seeing emptiness at that moment. You cannot be. Because you're not a Buddha. Only a Buddha can focus on both of it. He can focus on you and your mind, what you're thinking, and he can also focus perfectly on your emptiness all at the same time.
How do you know that the Buddha does that? I mean, how do you know?
This is the purpose of the whole class, and the question is beautiful. If someone asked me, I appreciate it. And I want you to ask, how do you even know a Buddha exists? How do you know such a thing is possible? You don't. We're going to discuss some proofs for it. Maybe the reason we're so lazy in our practice is that subconsciously we haven't really figured out whether such a thing is possible. If we knew it was possible, we might do harder. We might try harder. Jitawaychun. Yeah.
It just, Buddhism have a... point of view on if we aspire to this knowing emptiness and this awareness and stuff, how should we treat our lives? Like my job, I mean, how important is my job? Mm-hmm. Should I be a ditch digger or should I be a CEO? What difference does that make to me as a Buddhist?
I think there's a couple levels to answer that. One is that that you should have a job. I mean, right livelihood is that you should not grub off on it. One of the Buddhist principles is that you're supposed to not bother other people.
What about the monks? The fight?
Wait, I'm kidding. that's the first thing. Second thing is you have to die, you don't know when. We studied that. So if the time comes when you truly are ready for that, you'll probably cut down on your work, I would guess. but to do it prematurely is not good, because you'll just get, you'll end up going back, and when you're ready, you'll know. Okay? That's the second thing to say. I think the third thing to say is that work is a wonderful place to, your main job, the definition of nirvana is to stop your bad emotions. And if you sit in a retreat house, a cave, you won't be exposed to any of the objects that can inspire those bad thoughts. But if you go to your office, there's pretty ladies that a monk is not supposed to look at. There's people getting angry at you that you're not supposed to be angry at. There's your peers who are getting the position you wanted that you're not supposed to be jealous at. You know, there's the whole situation going on that you don't remember why it's happening, which is good for practicing your ignorance. You know, and those are all great. I think work is a wonderful, you know, I think you really have to. And then lastly, where are the sentient beings that you're working on? You know, who are they? Who are the sentient beings? They're the people in your office, because you spend more time with them than anybody else. You know, those are the, you know, you have bodhicitta towards all sentient beings, but the only ones you're exposed to are the ones in your office, and you can't even treat them right. So, so that's real. Those are the sentient beings for you, and it's very funny that we don't think that. Those are the representatives for you of all sentient beings in the universe. You always think that somehow, when you reach bodhicitta, it'll be towards every Martian and every Venusian, you know. And you don't imagine that the sentient beings that you have to work on, that are provided to you, are the ones in your office. And the day that you become, the day that you reach wisdom about emptiness and therefore act properly, it'll be towards the people in your office. So I think it's a great opportunity. Okay, anyway, those are all the answers. But there may come a day that you might want to work less. Or I don't believe in the United States you need to work 40 hours to live nicely. But 10 times, or 60. Okay. Anyway, Chitawachi. Chieshe. We did last week 5 states of mind that were not Tema, right?
Yeah.
So, my question to you is, does the Buddha have only Tsemas, or does he ever have a Temi? He's a Temikibu. He's supposed to only have correct perception.
He perceives the conventional nature, which is us perceiving Temis.
Yeah, that's one of the Temikibu. Now, what about, what is the definition of recollection?
He can image in your mind of something you've seen.
It's perceiving something that you've seen before. And the definition of Tsema is Sarvamidui Rupa, which means a fresh perception. So there's a huge debate. What about the Buddha? What about the second instant of your Buddhahood? What about your omniscience at the second instant of your Buddhahood? What's it perceiving? It's perceiving everything in the universe. But you just saw that in the first moment of your Buddhahood. And in the next trillion years of your Buddhahood, you're going to be seeing the same stuff. Because it's all past, present, and future. You're seeing everything. So, you see a non-tema? Because you're not having fresh perception? Well, you're having old perception.
Why wouldn't it be fresh every moment he sees it again? Even if it's the same thing, it's not changed, but it's still fresh because he's still perceiving it at that moment.
Yeah, because it's direct.
Yeah.
And that's the answer. He does have direct perception. Fresh. Direct perception each instant towards every
things are changing for him too, even if he can see the future is changing.
Well, there were schools in Tibet in the old days that said a Buddha's wisdom has to be unchanging. And it's disproven by Dharmakirti. He said that's not true. If the image is changing, the mind, which is a mirror, is changing also. So the mind, even the mind of a Buddha is changing. It doesn't change from non-omniscient from omniscient to non-omniscient, but it does constantly, as it reflects new objects, and as objects change, or even just shift from past to present, although he sees them all, his mind is also moving. We say he's omniscient, but he's not unchanging. His mind is not unchanging. So that was a big argument in Tibet. It was a big problem. For a lot of people said, oh, there has to be stuff that the Buddha didn't see at the first moment of his omniscience that he sees at the second moment of his omniscience. But it's not true. Otherwise, he's not omniscient, obviously. Yeah.
I wasn't clear on the recollection in the sense that, are we talking about seeing it in your mind again, or the second time you're on the subway platform and you saw that poster again, this time you know what it is?
Mostly seeing it in your mind.
In your mind.
Recalling something mentally.
Mentally.
Yeah.
Not visually.
Yeah,
or.
No, because as a direct perception, it's again triggered by a direct object. And that's fresh. Recollection is a wimpy, because the blue from 5 minutes ago is generating a new consciousness in your mind, and it's very wimpy. It's actually not the blue, it's a lousy image of the blue in your mind that's generating the consciousness. So that consciousness is not as trustworthy. It's not as...
Not as fresh.
What do you call it? Fidelity. It's not...
It's disintegrating.
It's weak, and it's wimpy, and it's getting close. It's a non-sema, according to this school.
And that's our perception.
That's how
of
we
it,
see things
not
of
the
past,
Buddha's.
Things that we've seen in the past. He sees them directly.
So he sees recollection directly.
He can see you recollecting. Okay. But he doesn't have recollections. Because
he doesn't need them.
When he sees the blue that he saw 10 minutes ago, it's the blue of 10 minutes ago directly generating a consciousness.
Even if he's not looking at it.
He's looking at everything.
How could it change
then? Well, you can say as it moves through time.
Because there is no time.
Well, he still recognizes our perception of time.
What?
He can, maybe his mind moves as he sees us changing our perception.
So then, is the Buddha seeing everything in the past a recollection?
No.
How could he have recollection then?
Because
if he sees the past directly, there's no such thing as recollection for a Buddha.
No such thing for him.
Can't be.
Everything is direct for him.
But if he sees the future, then things aren't unchanging.
Say again?
If he sees the future, it's not an unchanging thing. It's a given thing for him. So it can't be a changing thing.
If it's functioning, it's changing, even in the future. If it's doing something, by doing something, it has to change. But I know what you mean. I know. I see what you're saying. For him, it's all like frozen.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
But we don't know. I mean, nobody knows. I mean, it seems to me this kind of time. I mean, how could anyone know truly exactly what it's like unless they were a Buddha themselves?
We can't. But we do have to attempt to prove that he's omniscient. We do have to attempt to perceive.
Yeah, but to say exactly the way he perceives something. I mean, you could say generally, but exactly the way he perceives something.
It's only in fact only another Buddha can. The way you see obvious objects is with direct, correct perception. The way you see hidden, just plain hidden objects is with reasoning, thinking. The way you see deeply hidden objects is what? It's like an authority. The Buddha says, look, the reason this thing goes to the left here, and the reason it doesn't go to the right is that you waved your arm like that 10,000 years ago. Only the Buddha can see that kind of stuff. No matter how much we contemplate it, we can understand in a rough way that something must have caused it, and we can figure out the causes roughly. But we can't actually see that it was a wave of our arm thousands of years ago or something like that. By the way, it must have a cause, right? Everything has a cause. It's changing. And we just choose in our society to ignore those questions. Why did the left wheel of the car go flat and not the right wheel? Why did the person on the left die and not on the right? Why does this medicine work for him and not for me? Those questions we just avoid.
In the West, wouldn't we go back to a series of causes also?
To short-term causes. They say, well, the medicine didn't work for you because your enzymes are different.
Why
are my enzymes
different? Yeah, the enzymes are different because
and
of this
gene.
And they say,
your father was such a... I said, why was he my father? Yeah. You say, well, you know, don't ask a silly question. But then you say, oh, Mr. Scientist, is it a thing? Yes. Does it have a cause? Well, not, there's some things that... No, really. It's not, it's very unfair. They when they get to a thing that they can't figure out the cause, they just skip it.
There's no way of knowing, they would.
Oh, they just skip
why
it.
The pin
why,
broke
why was he your
time.
Father? Why wasn't somebody else your father? You know, and children ask that question. And if I ask this question in my office, they'll laugh at me. You know, it's not a silly question. It's a thing that has to have a cause. It's some object. All objects have causes. Once you get into saying this object has a cause and this doesn't, that's voodoo. That's Middle Ages stuff. But you grew up with it, so you feel comfortable with it. 100 years from now, they'll probably say we're silly. Hopefully. Okay. Chetva Stupa. So what are the three? These are the three tests.
What is Chetva
Stupa? Chetva means test, Su means three. They are the three tests for checking what someone says. When the Buddha says, hey, it was when you waved your arm 10,000 years ago. These are the three tests that a normal person can use to check whether or not what he says is reasonable. Did I give you his famous quotation? Jinbei Longzhi to me. I'll write it, but you don't have to memorize it. It's not on your homework. It's one of the most important quotations in Buddhism.
Do you mean checking to see if it's logically accurate?
We're going to talk about it. Right. I'll give you a quotation. Jinba, without that sa, is the first perfection. What's that?
Giving.
I'm not too hot about generosity because it can also mean giving protection. It can mean giving dharma. I like giving, but I don't, you know, I'm not going to shoot all the people. Translated as Jinba. But I think once you learn more about it, giving sounds better. Jinba means giving, first perfection. Longzhi means things that you own. What do you call it? Things in your possession. Chim is short for Tsuchim. Does anybody know Tsuchim?
Morality.
Yeah, second of the perfections. Morality. Which I, you know, it is morality, but, you know, morality is such an unpopular word in our culture. I kind of like not hurting others. It's the same thing.
Forever?
Not hurting others. It's the same, it's absolutely the same thing. Shenyu Shidan Chepame, Dopa Deon Muale, Sutin Yishi Dibata, Boy Sapu Jinchapa, Sabu Nasa Yunushi, Dibata Yunushi. Definition. Chim. Chim Ki De. De means, Ki means by. By. De means, happiness. And it's a very famous quotation of the Buddha. He said, if you give to others, you will have possessions. If you keep your morality, you'll be happy. You'll be a happy person. And he's talking karmically. And when you talk karmically, normally it means in your next life. So what he's saying is,
excuse me? Say the whole thing again.
If you give to others, you will gain possessions. And if you keep your morality, you'll be happy in your future life. Not only in your future life. If you follow certain Buddhist practices like this in a radical way, in the higher teachings, the whole idea is that it could be in this life. But generally speaking, next life. So in your next life. This statement can only be confirmed with which one of the three kinds of samurai. Can you see it direct? Can you see the truth of this directly? Impossible. You can't even see your future life directly. Can you see it with reasoning? You can, but it's not going to be a very clear perception. You have to take his word for it. It's authority. You have to depend on authority. Now my question is, being Buddhist and being logical, the idea of accepting something on authority is very distasteful. We don't want to do that. We don't like it. So therefore we have chepasum. Chepasum means you don't take something on authority without the chepasum. That authority has to be checkable with chepasum. You don't just believe what the Buddha said because the Buddha said it. It's got to pass these three tests also. And now I'll give you the three tests. Say, Munsum Ki.
Munsum Ki.
Minerva.
Munsum
Ki.
Munsum Ki.
Minerva.
Minerva.
Munsum means direct correct perception. It's short for Munsum Kemo. Direct correct perception. In the same way that you can see this color here. He means by, B-Y. He means by, B-Y. Me means what?
Not.
Mami min me are the negatives in Tibetan. Me. Nerpa means, Nerpa is a very difficult word. You help me with it. We couldn't do it much in the other class. It means, when I thought the sign on the subway was of a person from a distance, I had this perception of it as a person. But when I got closer and I had that other perception, the tema of the thing as a banana or whatever, that second perception, nepa is the first perception. You know, nepa means, literally it means harm or injure. In the definition of morality, that's the word that comes. Don't nepa other people.
Like that?
So you think about it. I don't know how to... It means when one perception bams another perception. And the first one just dissolves because it was standing on one leg anyway.
Cancels?
So you could say cancels.
Displaces.
It just blows it away because the first one was wrong and the second one is correct. And that's how, it's like when you're at work and you thought somebody was out after you because they did something, and then you hear from another person that they did it because the boss told them to do it, and then suddenly that first perception just dissolves. That's nirpa.
So it's nirpa, the action of displacing?
It means it cannot be nirpa by a direct perception. And what does that mean? It means what that person said, if you give, you shall receive. If you keep morality, you will be happy in your future life. And you see people who are naturally more happy than others. That statement cannot be disproved with any direct perception that you can ever have. Period. You can't prove it's wrong with any direct perception you have had or ever will have. That's the first test. If you pass that test, it's already pretty good. I mean, well, it's one-third good. You can't disprove it with any direct perception you have or have ever had. Right? And that's natural because if it's true, you can never have a tema that is not true. If it's true, you can never have a tema that contradicts it or that blows it away. You never will have such a tema because it's impossible. Didn't say that.
Yes.
I know. I agree. So far, I haven't said anything about proving it's true. I'm just saying you can't unprove it. You can't disprove it so far.
Well, why can't something be true at one time and that, you know, something is...
Right. Well, this is a universal truth. If you ever have a tema that contradicts universal truth, it's not a universal truth anymore.
No.
If you ever have a direct, correct perception that contradicts this statement, it's not true.
So, is this where all three have to be?
I didn't get that.
Or any one of the three? Because
well, all three must be true. All three of these conditions that I haven't given you yet.
Well, but this is not covering things that I can't know. Something happened across the street yesterday that I didn't see. I can't ever have a direct perception of that.
I'm getting there. Give me time. Say, Jepaki.
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 Minerva.
Minerva.
Jepaki.
Jepaki.
Minerva.
Minerva.
What is Jepaki? Reasoning. correct, foolproof reasoning, airtight reasoning. Not the fuzzy reasoning we always use. Like I'm at work today. We have a supplier in Mumbai. He hasn't supplied the stuff he was supposed to supply. You know. Now it's either because he really doesn't have the diamonds, or it's because he has them and he's giving some other company, because they're paying him more. Okay? I mean, those are some of the... So if I find out it's from somebody that definitely he's not giving them to somebody else, I can have a J-Pak that he just doesn't have them. But even that's not a J-Pak, because maybe he's got them and he's hoping to give them to somebody else. And you see what I mean? I mean, J-Paks are very difficult. To be a good logician mentally is very, very difficult. And in you, that's why we get in trouble with people. We do lousy J-Paks. Actually, they're not J-Paks. You know? If you could think of every possibility, then you could say, I have a J-Pak. He's not giving them to me. For that reason. But it's very difficult. And if you get in the habit of keeping your J-Pak straight, the people you know in life who are successful and who are good people are very strict about their own J-Pak to themselves. They don't allow themselves to judge a situation or a person without satisfying pure logic. Totally honest logic. Very difficult. We don't do it much. J-Pak means good reasoning, solid reasoning, airtight reasoning. I mean, Nepa means not what?
Wipe down.
Whatever. I mean, not, what's a good word? I don't know. Disproved.
Displaced.
Not contradicted by good reasoning. Okay. And if this statement is true, which as a Buddhist you theoretically believe it, you will never be able to have an airtight logical reason why it's not true, why it can't be true. If you're honest to yourself as a Buddhist, if that's true, you'll never have a correct, reasoned, airtight perception of anything that contradicts that. And in fact, that's the case. You can't. You never will.
So what is
for Eric, we still haven't proved anything. We've only disproved something, okay? We still haven't... All we've proven is that I haven't seen it. I've just said, well, so far I can't prove it's wrong. Maybe we can't prove Hitler wrong, but that doesn't mean he was right. You've got to be careful here.
Now, what is the definition for ghee?
Ghee means by, by. So, cannot be contradicted by a airtight reason. Say, Nachi?
Nachi.
Mingyo.
Mingyo.
Nachi?
Nachi.
Mingyo.
Mingyo.
Na means before. Chi means after. Mi means what? Gyal means contradict itself. So what do you think it means, Nachi Mingyo?
Not
only that, but
before, after, ever,
what?
Ever, before, or later, future.
Well, it's referring to what he said, so what do you think? It's referring to his statements. So, what does the Nazi mean? Yeah, what he said, you know, yesterday, and what he said today, he doesn't change his story. Okay? Nothing he ever said before ever contradicts anything he said later.
Different statements.
Even different statements, yeah. Doesn't have to be about the same thing. It doesn't have to be that he switches story on the same thing. It can be that nothing that he ever said previously in his whole life ever contradicts anything he said later.
Try that on Bill Clinton.
And Jessel Kapa said, and this is the last thing I tell you before you get your tea, because I want you to get upset about it. Jetsu Kapa said, when you reach a real good state in your Buddhist education, you know, when you are really knowledgeable about Buddhism, you will understand that there is not one statement in the Kangyur, not one statement in 10,000 pages of scripture that contradicts, in, I'm sorry, 100,000 pages, that contradicts another statement in Buddhist scripture. You will not find it. With the more you study and the deeper you study, you'll find that there is not one statement in Buddhist scripture that contradicts another statement in all those 100,000 pages. Take a break.
Of course, initially it seems like there's lots of them.
Huh?
Initially it seems like there's lots of contradictions.
Whatever
it is,
nothing we understood before
ever
contradicted what?
Reading some cave in
Mockinger Falls.
Oh, thanks.
How's she
doing? I bumped into her where I work. She came in and she said that they heard.
There's not a single statement in Buddhist scripture that contradicts another one. I have one for you here. Ma means what? Around the world.
Mom.
Okay, Ma means Ma. Dang means and. Pa?
Pa.
Pa. Okay. Mother, Pa is the same all over the world. Ma, mother, and Pa, father. Ni is just a filler because this is a verse. It's found in a sutra. What's a sutra? Definition of a sutra?
Scripture.
Huh?
Words spoken directly by the Buddha.
Yeah. Sangye Kikar. Spoken by the Buddha. Yujimi Tujo Bongji Lu Sunbei Sangye Ma. Anything that the Buddha said in order to remove the bad qualities of disciples. Which means when the Buddha stubbed his toe and went, that's Buddha speech, but it's not a speech. Of course, he never stopped his tongue. Funny. Seja. Seja means something to kill. Should be killed. Should murder. Shing An. The Buddha said this. What is it? You should kill your father and your mother. And is the rest. There's more of this sentence. Shing means and there's more of this quotation. And then there was more. Shing means and. It means this is only part of a longer quotation. I just found the rest of the quotation. I've never seen it before. I went downstairs during the break and asked the computer because I wanted to make sure I was spelling it right. And it says, "And destroy your country and everybody in it." Okay. And there's more. Okay. Kill your father and mother and wipe out your country and everybody in it. Okay. Obviously, we have to. What I'm about to say about this subject is not in Dharma Chodi's book. Okay? It's in Madhyamika, it's in the middle path. But I just felt it was so appropriate here that I stuck it in, alright? It's very famous. We spend about a year on this subject. Chang'e, say it, Chang'e. Chang'e.
Chang'e.
Chang means figurative, not literal. It means the Buddha said something, but he didn't mean it that way. Right? Chang. You can find scriptures where the Buddha said things have their own nature. Things have a self nature. In the lower schools, he says things do have a self nature. Things are real. And then in later schools, he says, no, they're not. Okay. That's Chang. One of those has to be Chang. Chang Zhen. Nye. Nye means literal. Literal. So figurative and literal. Figurative means he didn't mean what he said. Nye means he did mean what he said. And we in Buddhism spend years on this subject because it's very important, right? How do you know when the Buddha meant what he said and when he didn't mean what he said? Because you can get in big trouble with a religious teacher, you know, if he says, kill your father and your mother, and people think he was literal, you have a problem. You wouldn't have mom here. Okay. So there are three rules for how do you know the difference. Okay. They're the ground rules for interpreting the Buddha. How do you know when the Buddha was talking literally, and how do you know when he was just speaking figuratively? How do you know the difference? Okay. Gong means thought. Meaning true thought or true intention behind what somebody says. When my boss says, what did he say this afternoon? It's really funny. I don't remember. Something like, you know, you're really very talented person. You know, it means we can't send anybody else to the internet. Nobody else is stupid enough to go. Yeah. I mean, that's a gong, okay? She means basis. So gong shi means, what did he really have in mind? What did he really have in mind?
True intent.
Yeah, true intent. I like that. True thought or true intent. What was his true intent to get me to go to Bombay?
Gong shi. Is gong tian?
Excuse me? Yeah, tema gong tian. That gong is the same gong. And that one means, what did the Buddha really mean when he taught tema? But this is gong shi. What do you think the gong shi is in this case? He says, kill your father, kill your mother. Destroy the place where you came from.
To liberate you, to be
and
free
all the people that you grew up with.
To be free of your past.
Be free of your attachment. In Buddhism, in the Buddhist confession from monks, Paramara Magabhatam, Kabodam Lopalu Magabhatam, we first have to confess any disrespect to our parents before we confess disrespect to the abbot or to our tantric masters. It means you must respect your parents. You know, it's more important. You know, it's listed before respecting your tantric master and the person who gave you your vows. You must respect your parents. You know, you're not allowed to. Killing your father or your mother is one of the five deeds that can get you to the lowest hell automatically. Period. There's only five. Trying to hurt a Buddha, killing an arhat, splitting up the monks during the Buddha's time, which you can't even do now, and killing your father and your mother. So obviously, he must have had something else in mind when he said that. That's gong shi, what he really had in mind.
What? To be free of
attachment? For the place where you grew up from and things like that. I mean, don't let that hold you back from your spiritual progress. It doesn't mean you have to reject them necessarily. But if you're, you know, if they keep you from being a good person or something like that, then you say, Mula.
Mula.
Nujie.
Nujie.
Mula.
Mula.
Nujie.
Nujie.
Mula means, the way things really are. Reality? True reality? In this case. Lopa Neso means the way things really are.
Ultimate? Or
no,
conventional?
Just the way things really are in the sense. We'll see, you'll see. It doesn't mean ultimate. It doesn't mean emptiness or anything like that. I'll explain it. Nuan La means, La means two. T-O. No, you had before. What's it mean? Hurt, damage, contradict. J means it does. So listen, I tell you something true. This wall is red. Mula Nuji means what? It offends your knowledge of what's real. That's what Mula Nujin. I mean, what do you call it? Offends your intelligence. Hey, come on, right? It contradicts what I know. I mean, it contradicts what I can see right here. You know, it's wrong. Contradicts reality. Contradicts what I can see with is real. Why did Michael say it was red? He wanted to explain the idea of Mula Nujin to you. That was my gong shi. When I call that thing red, it's Mula Nujin. It's not true. It offends your direct perception. You know it's not true. We're limited. That's the second. By the way, you're going to get those last three I spoke about and these three mixed up. Be careful not to. The three tests for checking what a person says. And now these three conditions for deciding that someone is just speaking figuratively are different. Okay? And don't get them confused on your homework. And, you know, I'm sorry there's two threes coming at the same time and they're kind of related. And,
NGU,
Lula,
what does that mean?
Lula means to the real reality. To the reality. It offends reality. You can see it's not red. Lula, it's yellow. The true condition. Lula, Nerje means it contradicts the true condition. You can see it's not yellow. You know very well your parents are to take out. Not something you should eliminate.
So what are these second three? What classification are they?
I was afraid you're going to ask me. What are you going to call it? The three ways to check. I guess you call it the three rules for interpreting the Buddha.
Is that was so obvious,
though? No. Or else there wouldn't be four Buddha schools. And each one swearing that they're right. Gopa means compelling need, big purpose served.
With a compelling need.
Either one, take your choice.
Okay.
It's a compelling need for him to say that. Why did the Buddha say to the Abhidhamma disciples, there is a self nature? Of course things have a self nature. If they didn't have a self nature, they wouldn't be there. It's itself. Why do you say that? Yeah, first of all, is it true? Is it Rula Mirje? Is it true?
It looks true.
It's not true. They
no,
don't have a self nature.
No,
or else the guy at work would seem nice to you.
But
please.
To them it would.
No, means the real reality. It is not true. But why did he say it? He had a gopa. He would have freaked them out. Gopa means it's a compelling need for him to say something which is not correct. And he did it all the time. And there are beliefs in each of the three lower schools which are wrong.
And what was his compelling need?
If he had tried to explain emptiness to those particular disciples, they either would have... Normally, what happens with a disciple whose intellect is not strong enough, when you explain emptiness to them, they can swing over to nihilism. They can say, nothing that matters. I can act any way I want. I can kill people, I can lie, I can steal. If everything's empty, and you've seen that, you know, pick up half the books in the Snow Lion catalog, see what they say about emptiness. You know, and they say, you know, well, you see emptiness, it's like it's color, and, you know, and then it liberates you, you know, you don't have to do anything right. When in fact, it's quite the opposite. When you see that the guy at work is empty, you realize that his, you know, the ugly way he seems to you is your own projection. He's empty, and then you realize where it came from, your past bad deeds, and then you stop doing things like that. So actually, the opposite is true. As soon as you understand something is empty, you have to quite soon after that realize that everything is totally up to your goodness. You must be good. So there's all these books about Buddhism, you know, teaching that emptiness means you can do whatever you want, to get, you know, it's liberating, you don't have to think about anything, just put your mind into a void, you know, it's wrong. And so the Buddha, to those disciples who might fall into thinking that, he said, oh, no such thing as emptiness.
How do you know that he was talking to those disciples? Because the books were written years and years after the Buddha was dead. So how do you know that they didn't misquote him or that, you know, this was made up by the people who wrote it?
We can establish a Gopa, and we establish that there is some pressing need to do that, even in the present time. Even in nowadays, you're not allowed to explain emptiness to people who are not ready. It's devoured.
How can you reconcile what
was on the top of the document? You think about it. I think it's when you understand Tengri that you can accept some compensation.
In that sense, it's not the best indicator. It's not like something you realize after 10 years of study.
No, I think
because it's a catch-all. You can put any contradiction under that by saying, well, there was a need within a certain context to lay bait for people.
You could say that.
He's talking about something much more.
Yeah, he's talking about a much... And in fact, I'll tell you, when you finish your five-year course, and when you have studied all four schools deeply, you'll see the same thing. You'll say, man, this is a fantastic network. It's all... I see why he said everything. You know, I see where everything hooks into everything. And that's why I wanted this course to touch everything. Because if you just taught Abhidharma, you wouldn't get everything. If you just taught the high school, Lamrim, you wouldn't get everything either. When you get the whole... They call it the sugar ball. In India, they have these brown sugar balls. They usually got maggots inside. Really. But wherever you eat it from, they say it's sweet, you know. Any contact you ever have with the Buddhist scriptures, if it's well explained, you just blows you away. You know, there's no part of the Buddhist scriptures that you can say are useless or meaningless or wrong or not helpful. Or every contact you have is very sweet, from the lowest school to the highest school. And it can tell you, if you ever have any other impression, you haven't studied enough, I would say. Okay. One more short thing. Yeah?
Is that that Gupa, we're not talking figurative. Oh, we're talking about...
These are the rules for establishing that something he said was figurative. There's a big need for him to say, kill your father, kill your father.
So when he says that the Abhidharma's things have a true nature, he's saying that... Figuratively, they have.
Sure.
They didn't know that he was meaning it.
No, by definition, they oftentimes don't know. Or they don't find out until later.
So, what's the difference between saying something figuratively to people who you know they don't know that you're talking figuratively and not telling the truth?
It's a debate in the monastery.
Man, a 50-year question.
The Buddha, it doesn't come true in English. The Buddha speak lie, but the Buddha don't lie. Something like that. The Buddha can describe lying, but the Buddha doesn't lie. But in Tibetan, it sounds cool. It's Buddha don't lie, Buddha lie. I mean, never mind.
Is it figurative and not literal, or both?
Well, it's very beautiful. I mean, I didn't want to tell you this, but since you asked. In the highest, even the division between what's literal and figurative is also an object of the Buddha simplifying for people. So the lower schools don't even agree to what the higher schools think is literal and figurative. The rules even in the lower schools are different. And in the highest school, in the Madhyamika Prasangika, any scripture which does not mention emptiness directly is figurative. It's not the whole truth. Even a book about morality, if it doesn't mention emptiness in the same breath, it's figurative. It's beautiful. That's a very beautiful thing.
So all schools recognize Trump.
Before you go to that.
Is the air conditioner cold?
No. Can I ask a question before you go to that? You gave us the three rules. So, how would you apply those? Can you give an example of how you get this statement?
Well, pani, mani, se, jai. So, first of all, what did he have in mind when he said kill your father?
How do you know?
Well, first of all, I'm a little nidjan. I mean, it offends everything that makes sense to you. You know that you shouldn't kill your father. There's something wrong with the statement. Then you try to figure out what he had in mind behind it. Oh, he meant don't be attached. Well, why did he say that? Why didn't he just say don't be attached? Why did he say come your father? He wants to shock you. He wants you to remember what he said. You will never forget that quotation. I'll tell you that in your life. I don't believe you. Any of you will forget it. If I got up here and said, you know, don't hurt your mom and dad. I mean, oh, I'm sorry. Don't have attachment. I mean, you forget that in about a week. Yeah, it has a value. It has a shock value.
So all three of those things should be there to
have
say
to be
that.
Present.
Yeah.
All three have to be present. Even deciding that is a tough job, and we know that. But at least you know that Buddhism talks about the rules, and I like that. I really like that. We have rules, and the books on that are very long. We have some over there. We did some on the computer for Sarah J. Tsongkhapa wrote a 210-page book about it, and most students in the monastery try to memorize that. And you get an award if you memorize it. It's such an important subject. Semagyupa. You have this already. The one who turned correct. That was in that quotation of Dignana. The one who became correct. The one who turned correct. And the last thing we're going to do tonight, it's only 1 minute, is why did Dignana say that? Why didn't he call the Buddha the one who is correct? Why did he use the word turned?
Because he
wasn't always? All good answers, okay? There's a negative need for him to say that, and there's a positive thing. I mean, there's a negative thing he's saying, and there's a positive thing he's saying. We call Yongchuki Gopa and Namchuki Gopa. There's something he's trying to get you to realize didn't happen, and there's something he's trying to get you to realize did happen. What's the thing he's trying to get you to realize didn't happen?
That he wasn't
He wasn't like that from the beginning. He was not like that from the beginning. The Buddha was not perfect from the beginning. In fact, he was just like you and me. In fact, he did some terrible things.
Really?
And it's the first 16 volumes of the Kanya, which are the books on Vinaya, monk's vows. They're not long stories about keep this vow, keep that vow, keep that vow. They are stories of the Buddha describing his, many stories of him describing his past bad deeds. It's like Rinpoche saying what a bad kid he was, if you ever read that book. I mean, the Buddha is describing horrible things, and then at the end of the story he usually says, by the way, that was me. You know?
In previous life.
Yeah, he was just like us. He's a little bit ahead of us. But we'll end up the same, huh? I mean, that's the point of class. He was just as bad as anyone ever was. So he was not, the negative statement, he never was, he was not perfect from the beginning. Positive statement?
He
did something to get that way. He did something to get that way. He followed some kind of method. He followed some kind of path. Those are the two implications of that statement. And the whole second chapter of Dharmakirti's book is going to be just about this four syllables. Somebody wrote a whole book about this. Somewhere to became turn correct. All right, Kylie.
The homework?
I'll get you after. Tom has invited anybody who's interested in having a discussion group about the vows, you know, that Rinpoche taught last weekend, which are bodhisattva vows and secret vows. He'd like to maybe start a group to talk about them sometimes and stuff like that and stuff. So if anyone's interested.
Well, also to discuss the practice that people got in the last initiation and looking forward to the initiation to come. And if people are interested in forming a discussion group, a study group, about what that entails and so forth, I'd be more than happy to talk more.
I know that Sturgeon, those guys are doing that. It's really good. I think they get together on Saturday night. It's really good.
Sāsīya-bhūkī-śaśyam-yatā-śaṁ
4.